I want to tell you about something I've used and I truly believe in. Replayer. It's a sideline camera built for youth sports. Just set it up, hit record, and it captures the entire game automatically. No chasing the ball, no holding your phone, just hands-free, stress-free recording. The in-game tagging is one of my favorite features. One tap, and you can mark a big goal, ankle-breaking moves, or a clutch tackle. Then pull those clips for later for review, highlights, or social media. And the live streaming's next level. A buddy of mine actually watched his son's game while flying cross country at 30,000 feet. That blew me away. If you're a parent or coach at the field every weekend, Replayer is a game changer. Head to replayer.com. That's Replayer.com. And I think you'll be amazed. Hey, soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of Team Player's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give Team Player a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hello and welcome to Chat by the Pitch. This is your host, Ian Babcock. This next guest I have is the general manager for North Texas Soccer Club. As you listen to this episode, you'll hear about him, his role, and what the club offers and what they do for North Texas soccer. So let's head to the pitch.
Matt Denny, General Manager, North Texas Soccer Club.
Give me a brief history on the club and maybe how long you've been with North Texas then.
Yeah, so we started in 2019. That was our first season. We were part of USL League One, the inaugural season for that league, and we were fortunate enough to put a really strong team together and win that league in the first year. So it was a great start, and obviously the dream is to start a team and win the league the first season. So last year in 2022 was our first season at MLS Next Pro, which is a new league that MLS set up, and we're just coming up to this season, which is our second season in the league, and we're really excited about that. So the first year in the MLS Next Pro was really just getting the league off the ground, and we're just excited to see how this league grows and evolves.
Awesome. So I know the upcoming season, we've talked about it. It's April 9th, the first home game. And yep. So what should fans expect the opening weekend and throughout the season then for you guys for this year?
Yeah, I mean, so we're gonna have a new staff this year, a lot of new staff. We've got really interesting coach in Javi, and he's come on from Austin, but he's got experience in Spain and other places in Europe that just really added to the team here. And I think we've got a really good staff, but we'll go. Our first game is this weekend in LA, so we go to LAFC, play on Sunday. Then we'll come back and we'll go back to LA Galaxy the following weekend. And she said April 9th will be our first home game. But we've put together a really strong team this year. I feel really good about it. The players we've brought in, you know, when you look at the start of a season, what we look at is once we've gone through a preseason is how many of these players do we legitimately think can project to the first team and beyond. And I think we've just got a group this year and our signings have been all top. So you never quite know until you get them in, and then you still throughout the season things can change. But at this point in the season, I think we're gonna have a really, really strong, really exciting team, and one that's got a good mix of they're all technical players, but we've got some good physical players at the back, and I think we're just gonna have a really exciting brand of soccer out there.
That's exciting to hear, just because it's always fun watching these players play. So what I on a personal question, so for me, it's what's the youngest player you guys have right now on roster and the oldest player? Because last season the average age for you guys, I think, was 19 and 4 months, if I'm remembering right, because they always made the announcements during the games. And you guys were the youngest team in the MLS Next Pro.
Yeah, we've always kind of looked at getting young players in if they're ready. You know, it's kind of the mantra is if they're ready, it's the age is kind of secondary. It's just we're trying to have them compete. So, you know, we've got a lot of our players we try and target is predominantly an under 23 team. You know, once you get past that point, the chance of them projecting to the first team is a little lower. Not to say it can't be done. But you kind of window shortens there. So a lot of our players here are, you know, 2003, 2004. We got a bunch of 2002s in here. So these are players that we think in the right environment are going to just develop and grow here. And then we're mixing our academy players. But of our signed players, mostly you're looking around at the 2002, 2003 age groups. And I'd say we sprinkle in first team players coming down, and we sprinkle in academy players coming up. So, yeah, it's a good environment and a good way to see these players develop.
GM, I know that you focus on signing new players and coaching staff. So what is your day-to-day role then? So people understand as a GM what you actually do for the club.
Yeah, it's, you know, for me, it's really evolved over the years. This club started, you know, I said 2019. And it's grown. So really, I've grown along with the team. We've identified things we need to change. And I joke that I kind of my job's spinning a lot of plates and making sure they don't fall. You know, I wear a lot of hats, but I think overall, my role is just to steward the team and the staff so that everyone has what they need to be successful. I mean, you know, ownership's been great about when I started this job, giving me just the tools and support I needed, so that, you know, as much help as I needed, it's there. If I want to run with stuff, it's there. You know, we're lucky because we have a lot of support from, you know, FC Dallas staff as well. So everything from sponsorship to grounds crew, you know, if I need help, there's support there. If I've got questions, there's people that have been there and done that. So it's just a really unique job. Running every kind of part of the club. So I'm fortunate. Every day I like to come into work and really enjoy it. And one of the things I've really been focused on, you know, is that role of the player side. You know, that first stepping into a GM role is, you know, learning about player contracts, player negotiations. And I've been really fortunate, you know, working underneath or with Andre Zanata, the FC Dallas technical director on this side. So I think he's one of the best in the business, and I've used him as a mentor and role model to really kind of learn from him and now really take the lead on a lot of those things. So we've got a good a good structure in place. And I think that it's just, we've got to have good people, and that's the biggest thing. Once we've got good people and we've got a structure in place of people that want to grow and develop within this club, you know, a lot of the decisions, the big decisions we make as a committee, and, you know, I think we've got a good group of people that are focused on going in the same direction. And once you have those conversations and people aren't afraid to kind of hear each other speak out, most of the times, you know, the decision gets made within a group. So it's good. And as I say, it's just, we've got to have good people. The structure of this club is we're trying to develop players. We're trying to create a good environment for these players to be pros and make the next step. But we're also doing the same with our staff too. So one of the hardest things is we've got to really just grow in staff. Every year we turn over a lot of players, but we also have staff move up, either move on to better opportunities, you know, as a step up, or they'll move up to the first team if there's opportunities there. So the first team right now, I think they have the team admin was with us. We have two athletic trainers with us. A performance coach was with us. I'm trying to think of a few more, but we've had people, you know, move up, and that's a good thing, because we're not only developing players, but we're developing staff and having that as a tool we use, you know, for the organization.
That's awesome to hear, because that's how, I mean, the company I work for, that's the whole point. So they can either bring you in, you work at your job and learn a skill, then they recommend sometimes changing roles so you understand how things work. That's awesome that you have it, not just for the player side, but for the back office side of the club. So since you have the FC Dallas side of the equation, that brings in the academy. And since a lot of the players that you guys do sign come through the academy side, and I think that's great for FC Dallas academies, that they have that option for players to go at your level, at the pro level. How does that, how do they translate those players? I know that because you guys might have 2-a-days or 3-a-days training sessions, depending on the season or the time of the year, how do they adjust to that, or how do they make that mental change ready for them?
No, that's a good question. I think it's really just something we do throughout the club, through academy, is every time, you know, a player, they've got to have the talent, first of all, but we put them in an environment with top coaching, and they're pushed, and they've been doing that throughout the career as a, when it comes to FC Dallas. If there's a player that's, you know, can be pushed to the next age group, they get pushed up and they get challenged, and that's what we do throughout. And there's not, there's a lot of times you'll see, you know, players just playing up an age group, because if they're ready for the next step, we want to stress them out and challenge them. And I think, you know, the gap used to be a lot closer between first team and academy, but over the last, you know, however many years, that gap's, you know, got wider and wider, and that's where North Texas comes in, and it's to bridge that gap. And you used to have, you know, a homegrown player that might sign for the first team, but they're not getting those really meaningful minutes. And I think that, you know, players come in, they adapt, and they get challenged, and that's what we want. So you can see it with some of our academy players now, is they're just going through, you know, tough moments, but you're hoping they come out the other side and adjust and develop. And that's what we want to do, is just push them to the next step, so they're not, you know, they're always challenged.
Always being pushed. Awesome. So they're getting stagnant, so they're always adjusting and growing. So it makes me think of Paxton. Paxton Pomacol signed a contract at, I can't remember what age, with the first team, and really never started playing until he was like 20 or 21, and as a starter. And that's a long time to sit as a second string person and to have the patience for it. And now that they have the option, if that would be the case today, he has the option he could possibly play for North Texas then. I mean, that's the great thing. I know that you guys...
No, that's exactly right. Exactly right. And that's where you see, you know, we've had like Tanner Tessman, Brian Reynolds, and they've got meaningful games. And when the opportunity or the time comes where the first team needs them, they're more ready. They're more physically ready, more mentally ready. And haven't just been not having those games. So I think it's a, you know, it's a huge thing for us to have this tool, and we use it well.
Now, with Going, sticking with the academy. So, what is do you how what's the youngest age you guys allow into your training sessions from the academy into your into the club?
I mean, really, it's for us. It's we haven't put a limit on it. It's whether they're just ready, and you know, if they, we've got to make sure they're physically ready to compete. But we've had players we've called up that, you know, 14 and come in when we needed bodies and really did a great job and enjoyed the opportunity. So it's a good experience for them. But if a player is showing they're ready and they can handle themselves, we'll push them up. And you know, Ricardo Pepi was 15 when he signed for us. He was our first signing. And I'd say we don't really look at age. We do have to be careful that we're not pushing them physically, where it's they're not physically able to compete. But if a player is showing that they're ready and we think it's a good opportunity for them to come into our environment, we'll invite them up.
That's awesome. I always I mean I ask partly because we've gone, my son and I, when he goes to the FC Dallas camp, we'll go and watch. And I swear some of these kids look like they're 14 years old, and that explains it then in the summer, because it is summer and they have more flexibility to be at training sessions and they can help along, I guess. How long do you guys normally bring up a player from the academy? Is it just to help out, or is it just to see where they're at? And if they're doing well, you guys continue letting them stay then?
Yeah, so there's always different situations. It just depends if a player's getting coming up because we have injuries or international call-ups, or you know, if they're just showing something and we want to see them in our environment and see how they adjust. But it really depends. If they come into our environment and they impress and they're pushing for minutes, you know, we'll keep them in. But we want people in the environment that are ready to be there, but we don't want it to sacrifice games. If they're an academy player and they're coming up to our environment, we still want them to play those games with their age group. If they're not getting minutes with us, we'll always still want them to get minutes with their respective teams. So, yeah, we don't really have a set, you know, limit on time that they come up, but it's we've got a pool of players that we'll know and we're keeping our eye on. And if they start doing well in their academy teams and academy games, you know, a coach might say, hey, you know, if you get an opportunity, bring them in. They're doing really well. And we want to reward that too. So it's one of those things. If they're doing well at the academy age, we'll start to have those conversations and reward them with some time with us. So
Now, is it because they're part of the academy, they don't have to sign a contract and they can just come up and play, or do they have to sign the contract then for that time frame?
yeah, so for us, they're signing an amateur contract. So they do have to sign a contract, but it just maintains their college eligibility. So everyone needs to get registered to play with a team. And there's, you know, a limit on how many academy players can be on the field, you know, how many spots we can sign for academy, but we can play around with those throughout the season. But yeah, it's an amateur contract, and that's a great thing too, is we can also have a player come in, and if they're, you know, wanting to keep their college options open, that's a possibility too. So
That's awesome. I mean, that's important, I guess, because if they want to play someday for, I mean, you have a lot of great players that are going through the academy right now. They're going off to some big name schools and
yeah.
here in the near future, and they have been on, I know they've been on your radar because I see them pop up on your social media. And I and it's just like you guys have, I swear every week you guys have one to two signings lately, with players coming through, which is awesome to see. And a lot of them are homegrown players, which is great to see. Gives the tangibility of becoming a higher level than just your academy or co collegiate.
No, that's right. I think it's great for us because, you know, we'll have academy players, you know, play with us, and the next generation of academy are looking over their shoulder like, that's where I want to be, and that's where I want to get to. And, you know, this year we've also had a player come in for preseason, really impressed, and he wasn't on an academy team, he was on an ECNL team. So we're not just solely looking at academy, we're looking at, you know, a lot of different areas we can pull players in if they're good enough.
Awesome. It's nice to hear because it's such, I know you guys have hundreds of kids you guys have on your rate going through the program. I have no clue. I know that FC Dallas is not the largest if not, if they aren't the second largest, they are the largest soccer program for youth in the area. So there's a lot of kids in that program.
There is. And the more we have success, obviously, the more it's going to help the future. And this year we had four players from our squad get offered first team contracts and playing for the first team. So of those four, if you look at it, two were with our academy. One was from open tryouts, which is a great story. And then another one that we had as an international player on loan. So we're really seeing these buckets of players coming from all over. And the more we do that, the more we can attract the next player and show a success, you know, and show, hey, if you come here, there's an opportunity. It's easy to say, hey, there's an opportunity, but until you've actually got that proof of concept, you know, now we're able to go to these agents and these clubs and say, look, we really do see a projection in the pathway.
You brought up the player. One of my son's favorite players is Bernard. And he came through, if I'm correct, he came through your tryout program. I remembering your video, right? His brother paid for it and told him he had to go do it because it was a lot of money for the family. And it's fun watching that story being told as you guys have shared it last season. And now he's with the first team. And it's such a great success story for him, but also for North Texas soccer, because it shows where you can end up if you guys are patient and go through the process.
No, that's right. That's right. His story is so unique. It's like something out of a Hollywood movie for sure. I mean, he was born in the refugee camp and came over here, I think, when he was 14 and was just playing high school. So for him to make that progression, and it's happened so quickly, you know, I'm really excited to see his story develop even more. So it's credit to him and credit to us. But if we didn't have this team, North Texas, that opportunity would have never existed. So we're really excited about being able to go out to the community and see there's a ton of good players, especially in the Metroplex. And we have players from, you know, all over come to these tryouts. We have international players make the trip from other countries just to come and get in front of us. And say there's a ton of good players. What we're looking for is those really good players that we see projecting and possibly making the first team. So it's a cool tool, and it's something that we want to continue and we take really seriously.
Now, the players that normally try out, are they normally kids in high school that are trying out, or are they all over the spectrum from high school graduates, college graduates, to international players? I know you guys just signed, I can't think of his name. He played on the U.S. Men's National Futsal team and played futsal over. Yes. Are they a lot like him, or are they really kids trying to make their dreams come true in the Metroplex?
It's all sorts. It's the great thing about it is we don't kind of we don't cap it. We don't check before they sign up. It's the backgrounds are really, really dramatically different. So we'll have local kids who have former international players that, you know, have gone somewhere else and now are trying to revive their careers. College people that come out of college and want to make it pro. The backgrounds are so different, and that's what's the cool thing about it is we're going out there with eyes open and really trying to identify potential prospects.
Now you're looking at the tryouts and you're looking at the academy. What type of tools should the players have in their arsenal when they are trying out or being looked at, or not even knowing you're being looked at? Like, are you guys looking for more polished, well-rounded players? Or are you guys looking for someone that's very coachable, that may have some rough patches still and needs to the next step to be pushed?
Yeah, I think ultimately we're looking, you know, for potential. We're not going to have a finished product, and we're looking for profiles that we see can project to the first team. And like, you know, you use the example of Thomas Pondekker. He's transitioning from futsal. He's obviously played outdoor a little bit, but it's, you know, for us at tryouts, we saw something. We brought him in for a couple of weeks to get a better look. And every time he trained and played, you know, what we're looking for in players, we're not looking for that finished product. We're looking for a player with the tools and potential. And we look at the profile that we can see, hey, if they're put in our environment, you know, can we help them develop and grow, and can they make the next step? So that's really what we're looking for. And you know, we have scouts, you know, just like we have open tryouts, we're watching players. We have scouts all around the globe that are scouting for FC Dallas. And they're also scouting for us. We're looking for those, you know, younger players that we see have the potential to move on up. And as I say, we're so blessed with our training environment, our facilities, and we feel that, you know, we can bring players here that can grow and succeed. So it's we're always looking for new targets, and we're keeping our eyes out, you know, for the next ones that we can see. And this could be a player that's, you know, gone under the radar, or maybe they've, you know, been really good as a younger player and had a dip, or all these things is we're just trying to keep our eyes out for the next level of talent. We've got, you know, this year we've got a player that was on the Brazilian youth national team, won the World Cup with them as a captain. You know, we also got a player from El Paso that's, you know, really young that we see can project too. So we're looking at definitely different aspects and different places we can find these players. But once we get them in, we're really confident we can maximize their potential and growth.
Now, what's the farthest away then you guys have signed a player then? Distance from Texas or Dallas?
I mean, if you're looking domestically, we've got players from, you know, all over the country have come from. We had a player from Boston this year. We've had even like from Texas or from locally, we've got McAllen. But if you're looking at international players, we've got Brazil, we've got Haiti, Portugal, Colombia, England, all sorts. We've got basically 7 international spots each year that we can use, and we want to use all of them, and we want to see if we can get these players in and find a diamond in them and push them up. So the thing is that, you know, those 7 spots, we can also purchase more from other teams, but if we've got those spots to use, we want to bring them in. I think we can find players that want to be in America or want to see if I can come to North Texas, I can make the FC Dallas team, play for FC Dallas. And we've got a history of obviously selling players to Europe and making that jump. And it's attractive for a lot of players. So we want to bring them in, but it also, I think, increases our training environment when we've got, you know, our academy players, our first team players, our signed players, you know, bringing in those international gives us some, just unique diversity to the team. And I think it pushes everybody to see, look, this isn't just academy anymore, or this isn't, you know, just a second team. This is the real deal, that they're bringing in players that, you know, they want to make the first team, and that's the goal.
Okay. So my next, going along the same timeline, so how long do you guys will normally hang on to a player or to develop them into the next progression, or if unfortunately they've plateaued and you have to release them, what is the average time span do you guys normally give a player to grow and develop, hoping to either pass them on to team one and sign them there or sell their contract?
Yeah, so typically I think you can see just from our history, you know, we're offering for a player that's, you know, older than 18, 19, we're typically offering just a 1-year contract with a 1-year option. You know, if you're a younger player and we feel like they might need more time to just adapt and grow, a lot of times it'll be a two-year contract with a 1-year option. You know, so it depends on the age, but I think after, you know, for most players, if we've had them here a year, we get a good idea. Obviously, younger players need a bit more time. But yeah, we tell players this isn't somewhere you want to be for a long time, and that's not a knock on us, but it's just our philosophy, and if they come here, it's what they should aspire to make the next step. So the good thing is that we've made, you know, we've had players make the first team, but we've also had players that have come to us and been released after a year, but they've still gone on to have careers at other clubs, and something that they might not have had in, you know, if North Texas wasn't here. So it's just, as I say, I keep saying it's a really unique environment, but if you see our locker rooms are across the hallway from the first team locker room. In the morning, we'll go out the same door to training fields. We'll walk the same way, and our training fields will be adjacent to the first team's field. And you know, we tell players is you want to make the jump over to that locker room. You want to be on that field. And if that doesn't motivate players, I don't know what will. But every day they see it. They see the first team. They see it within reach, and they see what they can grasp. And it's just a really unique day-to-day life for them to see something that's so close they can grab it.
And so I would say then you don't have long tenured players. Then you don't have players that are playing with you for 5 or 6 seasons. You don't. I mean, you guys have been around since 2019. So we're on what, year 4 and take a year out. Uh-huh. So you don't have that long of a tenured already. But the goal is not to keep them.
Correct. Either
because along that same idea of tenured players. I know when you guys started off, you guys were with League One, and then the MLS created MLS Next Pro. Do you see the big difference? I mean, there's a lot of criticism of MLS Next Pro just because it is a bunch of younger players, and they aren't playing against players that have been fighting for a spot for 5, 6 years and hitting that average age of in the Champion League One. What is it? The Champion League and League One, where they're above the age of 25. Mostly, and so they're playing with a different set of men. I mean, in my mind, if you aren't 20, if you're still under 22, you're still a kid. And how do you, I mean, physicality, I mean, mentality, I mean, what is it? The average age you peak at, what, 27, 28 years old, they say, for a player. Maybe that's the English Premier League. I could be wrong, but that's the number I've always been given. And when they peak after that point, it's pretty quickly. And when you have the average age of 19 and 4 months or 20 years old, how do you prepare them for the next stage? Because they are going to be going against guys that are 23, 24 years old. And sometimes, I mean, the first teams sometimes have players in their mid 30s still playing. I mean, it's a different type of game physically wise, I would assume. I don't know because I have never played at that level, but I'm guessing. How do you prep them then for that?
And are no, it's looking... it's a great question. It is a great question, and it's one I've been asked a lot. But it's I think that the age of players is becoming a lot younger, not just here in the States, but across the world. It's not rare to see players in the Premier League that are, in the early 20s and even teens. It's the age has definitely come down. And I think the average age of the U.S. men's national team is 25. And the challenge is when you talk about MLS Next Pro and you talk about USL, my opinion is both are useful and both have their own strengths, right? But the thing I've noticed with MLS Next Pro is you've got the technical quality that I don't think you have at USL. USL's got the physicality because they are a little older players. But both teams at MLS and X-Pro are trying to play the right way, and they're trying to play a way that translates to MLS. And USL is about figuring out the moments, grinding it out, and that's valuable. But if you have a 28-game season, the better thing for players' development, I feel, is to have 28 technically good games, and that we've shown this year with 4 players getting signed to the first team, that's the ultimate goal. But I think there's definitely value in those physical games, and as MLS Next Pro grows and there's more independent teams come into the league, that'll be a good thing for us. And we'll have those matches that are going to be more physical, where players have to figure out challenges and how to figure out different ways to play in the game. But I think a really clear way of looking at the two leagues is we have players on the upward trajectory of their career, right? And we'll have more players in this league that are going to progress to MLS. We're going to have more players in this league that are going to play in World Cup squads in 2026 and probably beyond that. And it's a really special thing for us to say, look, we're going to have the next generation of talent. You can watch these games. And just like Ricardo Pepi, I mean, people still tell me I was at that first game of his when he scored a hat trick for North Texas, and he's gone on and done great things. And I think it's just one of those things is it's a technical versus quality. I think that you need to have a balance, but the more the more games at MLS Next Pro is gonna help these players reach the next step. And I think that people have this opinion that MLS Next Pro is a really young league, but I think the average age was about 22, 23 this year. And I'd have to look at the exact stats, but I think about 70, 75% of the players or the minutes were given to first team or contracted players. So it's great for academy players to get involved, but this isn't just academy players. The perception, I think, is not 100% accurate. So it's one of those things. I'm really happy with this league, and it's again, the first year was getting the league off the ground, and it's only going to grow and get better and better, which is exciting.
That's great to hear. Because I just know North Texas because we watched majority of your games when we were watching them last season. Home and away, we weren't able to make it there. We normally watch it at home, and they always talk about the average age. I feel like North Texas was always the youngest team. I remember watching the Colorado Rapids, I think it was team two, or Colorado Rapids two, I think it's and their average age was like 24 and a half. I'm like, there's a huge age gap on that field.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's right.
And I know that I just look at it because you guys are the local team. I know that the league wide is much older. It's just North Texas. I don't know if a lot of families will know that, but yeah, if you don't follow you guys, it's amazing how well you guys have done with a much younger squad. I mean, the IQ grows as they get older, but
right. I feel, as an organization, we're not afraid to play young players, and that's true for the first team, and it's true for the second team, and we're just it's hard to trust for those coaches sometimes to have that confidence and that trust in the players. But I think we've always had good coaches and a good philosophy that, we've had players that have come in from other clubs that are really quality players for North Texas, and they just weren't getting the opportunities at other clubs because, there was someone older that was, ahead of them. And you put these young guys in, they're probably going to make a few mistakes, but they're going to grow and they're going to become really good players if we put that trust into them.
Now, with you guys talking about the age of the players, do you guys more focus still on development over winning, or is winning just as important as development, or how do you guys treat it? Because I know that winning is not always everything. If you can build players now and get them ready for team one, or if they're ready to go on to somewhere else and possibly sign a contract with another club international, I mean, it all has benefits for you guys. So which one do you guys tend to weigh more towards, development? Or I know winning's all important because that's revenue stream coming in, because if you have a losing team, no one wants to come watch a team that's always getting their tail handed to them. But it's figuring out, how do you guys balance that equation then for you guys, since you guys did start off on such a
first
step?
No, you're right. And 2019 was obviously a phenomenal year, but we had a special group of players. It's finding that balance, and the message from our ownership is that we can do both. And if we're focused too much on development and players aren't, so concerned about winning, or the staff isn't, you're missing out. They've got to compete and they've got to want to win. And, for us, we want to make the playoffs every year, and then see what happens there. So it's a real balance, but we put a roster together where, we're not forgetting about the development, and we put our strongest squad together that once the season starts, then we're really looking at winning every game and playing a great way. So, when we sit down at the start of the season, we'll look at our roster, we'll look at which academy players we think will get minutes and be involved. And if we've got, a player that's a right winger, right, that's an academy player, we want to get a lot of minutes, we're not going to go out and sign an international right winger that's going to take away from their minutes. So we look at what we've got in-house, and we build the squad around that. And that way we know we're going to bring in the pieces that are going to make a strong squad. And then once the season starts, we're looking at winning. So how we build the squad, is where we're not trying to take away from opportunity for academy players. And then we're bringing in players around that. And it might be, players that we see, what's the need for the first team? Is it, you know, centre backs? Is it strikers? And bringing in players that way. So we always look at academy players, what first team players might come down, and build around that. And as I say, we feel like if you're not going out there to try and win games, that's not realistic to how it's going to be when they make the next step. So we want to stress them out and make those games important, but we can't forget about development. But in order to develop players, we want them to want to go out and win and build a squad that we feel can go out and win games.
So building your squad. So I know that you have a lot of players that come through. I mean, you guys have, like I said earlier, you have a lot of players that are going off to college. How do you navigate that with the players? Is it their want to go to college? Do you guys help them to push them to college? Or if they want to go directly into the pros, how do you guys navigate that with these players that are coming through North Texas that are getting ready to make that decision? I mean, you guys do have players under the age of 18. Nolan Norris mm-hmm. just signed his first pro contract with Team One, and I'm guessing he'll get some minutes with you guys this season, just because he's third, I think, in line for his position. And that opens up I don't know how it works with rostering and how that stuff works. Can you guys jockey back and forth between Team One for positions and players, or is it Team One's locked in and then you guys do what you guys have to do? Because I know that if I'm reading the rule book correctly, your rostering is a little bit slightly more lenient because you do have the academy.
Yeah, so like we have the amateur players can sign and play, and then we have our contracted players, and then first team players, when they play for us, it's an official loan, so we would loan them down. So in the example of Nolan, he would be available to get loaned down to us and play games with us. So the thing for players like that is they need to be playing games, right? So if they go too long without playing games, it's not much help for anybody, but they can get games with us. We can have players that train with the first team, you know, the whole year and play games with us. We can have players on the first team that come down and train with North Texas all season. So we really kind of play around with that. But in your question for the college route, it's really a case by case, but each player is different, right? So we can have a player that's maybe on a US national team at a youth level, and we can really see that, you know, their projection is MLS, pro player, that's what they want to do. There's other players that the decision's not so easy. And then we really don't take that for granted. We don't force them or push them into contracts. If we want to sign them, we'll have that conversation. But we need to know that each player, as soon as they sign a pro contract, their college eligibility is gone. So it's really for us, it's a responsibility that we need to make sure if they're making that decision, it's a family decision. It's not a club decision, because every kid wants to make it pro, but they have to realize, you know, are you going to have a long career, or is it good to go to college for a year or two and then come back? But it's something. Yeah, we try to as much as we want to sign every player, we know it's a big decision, so we try not to push them, and we try to say, look, here's what's on the table, and some players, you know, will really want to sign, and we'll say we think college might be the best option for you guys. So it's just something. It's trying to do the right thing is important, and the right thing for the players is really important.
That being said, so when they, I'll make up an example. It's you have a player that goes off to college. Can you sign them to an amateur contract so they're tied to the club so they can't sign somewhere else? So maybe when they graduate or decide they're done with college, they can come play with you guys? Or is there – or do you guys don't do that because you don't want to lock down the player? And
so basically the way it works is if they sign an amateur contract with us, it's they can play for us. As soon as they go to college, if they play one minute of a college game, that – amateur contract is no longer an option. So for them, it would be when they finish college, or if they leave early, then they would have to sign a pro contract. The amateur is not an option past that point.
I learned something new today. it's fascinating because I know that the whole collegiate world is set up differently. And I know that that they have all these other programs set up for players to come back and play in what league is it? I'm sorry to use another club's name, DKSC. They have an amateur team for when the girls and boys come back from college, they can go play in the amateur mm-hmm. league during the summer. Do you guys plan, do you guys have stuff like that for players? Do you guys do that stuff, or do you guys fully capitalize on North Texas then?
We have players that have been part of our system that will go off to college and come back in the summer and train some. And we want to, you know, we're big believers that, you know, they're part of the family, and, you know, it's, we do that, yes. But we're also, you know, you mentioned DKSC, and they do a great job too. We played them in a preseason friendly here, and it was great to see, because we had, I think, four players that were formerly with North Texas, and we had other players that had come in for training with North Texas. So they've been able to still have that local soccer that they can play in. And it's cool to see the impact on the community. I think that if you do a heat map of the players we've had in for training or signed for us or played games for us, it's really cool to see where they've gone on to go to different clubs and keep playing and do things. So.
Awesome. I mean, I could sit here and talk all day about this stuff because it just intrigues me beyond belief. You have no idea. So you guys really don't make an emphasis on a player to go what direction. It's based on what's best for them, which is great to hear. Let's move back to your guys' season coming up. Is there any promotions that fans should be expecting this season or should know about that might be on the flyers I know you guys hand out and on your website that you guys will be promoting this year, or is that still somewhat in the works?
No, I mean, we're obviously our schedule release just a short time ago, but right now we're doing, you know, season tickets. We have an early price, so people can get season tickets for as low as $7 a game. And the big plan for us this year, and it's a big investment for us, is we're really trying to get out in the community and engage with local groups. I think that it's something that we've done, but we want to kind of put petrol on the fire and ramp it up with our grassroots and our community engagement. So we actually got some offices out in Arlington, and we're going to have more staff out there on the sales side. So we're focused on that 15-mile radius of the stadium. And really increasing awareness. I think this is our biggest challenge has been awareness. And we've gone from moving to Arlington during a COVID year, which kind of hurt our impact just the first year. But the more and more we talk to people in the community, it used to be like, we had no idea you played out of Choctaw, to now, like, you're the soccer team that plays to Choctaw. So now they know we're North Texas and the second team of FC Dallas. So the more and more we can get out in the community, going to schools, going to soccer fields and community events, I think that we'll get people out to games, and when they come, they have a great experience. So as I say, this year we're really putting an emphasis on that. We want to have a really strong community presence. And I think that's part of our goal is when we set up this team to go out, we called it North Texas and we went somewhere else, not just in Frisco. We want to be a community club. We want to get out there and I think that for us, if we can target that close radius of the stadium, even, you know, the further out we get from Frisco, there's not this level of soccer out there and this experience. So that's really our goal this year is to get out and be the community club that we want to be.
That's awesome. I know that last year, before all the changes in staff, you guys were doing some outreach programs with clubs and having programs with clubs within the community, which I thought was very cool to hear that you guys were running, I guess, clinics. That's the word I was looking for with clubs, and to hear that you guys do that and bringing your coaching staff in to help with that and really trying to make an impact around yourself. As a parent, that's great to hear because once again, it brings these players and coaches closer to these kids to make the reality like, look, these are real people that you can actually talk to. And I don't know a lot of people knew that you guys were doing that last year. And that answers my question. No. So I have a go ahead.
I was just saying, we enjoy doing it, and for us, it's one of those things. I think that having a role model and having people you can, get close to is cool. It can spark that interest, and you never know what it's going to do. But for us as well, we go out to these community events. We're trying to teach our players to be pros, and they go out to a school and they got to talk in front of an assembly of 200 kids. And you think it might just be like a group of second, first graders, and it's no big deal. But these players having to talk about their career, their journey, they get nervous, and afterwards they get to sign autographs, but they have a good time, and it's just, again, it's preparing them mentally for the next step, and the experience they get from that, I think it's huge for them, and it's something we're trying to not just develop the player on the field, but off the field, and develop these good pros. And we're looking at, holistically. We've brought in a sports psychologist. We're working really closely with a nutritionist this year. All these things is we want to, look at the bigger picture.
Now, you touched on it briefly, and I meant to go back to it. It was you guys picked the name North Texas Soccer Club instead of slapping a number to FC Dallas 2. Most clubs, that's what they do for the MLS Pro team. Why did you guys choose North Texas versus not just slapping? I mean, FC Dallas tends to do the thing their way, no one else's way, with their history dating back from the beginning of the team. Why did you guys pick North Texas?
I think really our goal and our vision for the club has always been to have its own identity. It's important for us for so many reasons, but we're really just like one of the things is we were always our goal, even though the first year we played in Frisco, our goal was to branch out and play in a different area. It's you go further out to Tarrant County, Fort Worth, and if you've got Dallas in your name, it's not always a positive thing. So we wanted to have its own identity. We wanted people to see it as its own club, but we also, we wanted the players to have some ownership of a team. We wanted to go out to community events. We wanted to have fans identify with the team and not feel like it's the JV team. We'll go out to events, and rather than saying we're FC Dallas second team, it's like we're North Texas. We play out of Choctaw Stadium in Arlington. This is a team in itself, and the way the team grows, we want it to. It's always going to be the FC Dallas second team, but we want it to have its own identity. And we're starting to get some really avid fans that identify with the team. And as you said, it's you can then see players make FC Dallas, and they're like, that's the former North Texas player. But we want it to have its own identity. We want it to not just always be perceived as second string. So it's definitely a goal for us, and that's why we did it. But I think it's right now, as you see, it's working in the respect that it's having its own identity, it's having its own brand, and we go out to areas in Arlington and surrounding areas is starting to get people really know what we're about and why we're doing things.
That makes more sense. I mean, yeah, being labeled Team Two is not a nice logo to have.
Well, it's funny because we will go to I remember we did a hospital visit, and it was down closer to Frisco, and people were like, some people were asking, so tell me a bit about the team. Are you FC Dallas? Are you not FC Dallas? And then we'll go to events more out in Tarrant County and Arlington, and they would know who we are. So it's kind of it's we're trying to focus on that area. And things like that, you can start to see the awareness is increasing, and the closer you get to Choctaw Stadium, it's a better awareness than maybe if you go into areas that are closer to Frisco, which is good for us. We've got a long way to go for sure, but it's starting to get there.
Now, will you guys, my curiosity now, because this is because of the limited seating capacity at the stadium where you guys play at, is there eventually going to be your own place where you guys play? Or are you guys planning on staying there and hopefully growing in Arlington area? So.
It's a good question. I think that, you know, obviously Rangers Choctaw Stadium has been phenomenal. We just renewed our contract there through 2024 with another option to increase for through 2026. So we're happy there. But it's no secret that if we can, you know, find an opportunity for a stadium that's maybe a bit, you know, smaller for us and a better fit, it's an opportunity we're always kind of eager to pursue or find out about. So, say the Rangers have been great, and we could see ourselves playing there through a long time because they're such a class act. Everything we need is there, the environment, the staff, and everything's been great. But we're not close to finding our own facility, and it's something we'd definitely entertain. I think if we could, ideally for every club at this level, if you can get a stadium that's 4,000 or 5,000 seats and, you know, a grass field, that would be the ideal.
Right.
You know, but that being said, I said we're super happy with Choctaw, and it's been a really, really, really good environment for us.
I have no complaints about the field unless it's 110 out and then you're in the direct sun.
Yeah.
There's no seating on the other side of the stadium.
Well, you know, they built that hotel right there, and apparently it's going to increase the shade, so it's above the west side, and so I'm curious to see what it does to the shade study as it comes in. So hopefully it gives us another 30 minutes of shade before the game.
So you guys are I noticed that this year, someone pointed out, I was really excited, I didn't ever looked at the times. All your games are mostly at 7:30 this year, correct?
Yeah. Yep. Just with the way it's set up with Apple TV, and we need to avoid obviously the first team's playing for either side, and it's some consistency, which is good. But we've got some midweek games, a couple of Saturdays. So it's gonna be good. It's tough on a Sunday, but I think if it's 7:30 it gives enough time to get in, watch the game, and get home at a decent time, especially if we're targeting those local people.
And then are you guys still continuing on? If it's a tie, you guys still do the PK shootout at the end?
If not, yeah, we will. So it's really, I think it was a great way to test out just implementing new rules. And it's something that the league is really trying to use this league as a way to test things out. So we have an innovation committee, which I'm part of, and we meet and go through, like, you know, what are the challenges? How can we combat that? And what can we do to, you know, test something out, make the league a little different? Like, one of the things they're introducing this year is for the playoffs, you're going to get to, if you have a top seed, you're going to get to pick who you play in the playoffs. So it's not just, you know, 1v4 and 2v3 or whatever it is, you get to pick your opponent, which is adding a whole nother dynamic, and it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out.
That is interesting, because you better hope you pick correct.
Well, that's just it. I mean, it's traditionally you could pick the lower seed, but you get it so often in a season where, you know, at the end of a season, there's a team that's, you know, dipped, been strong all year and maybe dipped down to the bottom, or there's another team that's just crept into the playoffs, but they're on, you know, a really good run of form. So if you pick the wrong way, it can come back and question your decision. But it's definitely a cool, it's going to raise a lot of discussions for each team on what they do. So, but I think if you look at, you know, at this level, it's cool, but could you imagine that at, you know, an MLS level or above, where there, you know, there's so many different factors involved. It's I think it's cool and it's unique, and that's one of the really just unique things about this league, is that we can do stuff like that and we want to innovate. So
now, that being said, are you guys looking at like an internal league where you guys have a like a tournament style, like you have the Lamar Cup and the Lamar Cup? Am I getting that right? Yeah, Lamar Hunt Open Cup.
Yeah, the Open Cup. Yeah.
And will you guys have something like that planned in the future, since you guys are just starting off, so you guys will have some competition, or is that something still in in the world.
So yeah, I mean the Open Cup is something that several teams have you know reached out and said we would like to be part of the Open Cup. Obviously, you know, with the rules in place, it's because it's the same ownership group. We can't have those teams, but we've expressed interest that we would like to be part of Open Cup in the future. Whether that's possible or not, I don't know. But if there may be some way of doing that in the future, it'd be cool. But the league also, one of the things they want to do is create an international tournament, international competition. Last year, they had games in Salt Lake against some Premier League teams. So the Premier League teams would bring their U23 team. But the league's in discussions with top leagues around the world to try and create international competition. And for us, if we can get our players playing those, you know, those top teams, it's going to be helpful for and a good opportunity for our players. So I think that, you know, you'll start to see that develop and grow as it leagues. And again, it's just another thing that talks to the innovation of the league and the way we're looking at it. So
I find the league very fascinating because there's all the, it's a huge difference between the MLS and MLS Next Pro, a lot of the rules. And it's fun to watch how things are growing and changing. It reminds me of Major League Baseball because they have the AAA and they do all the testing in AAA. And then if it works, they bring it up. It's like changing the size of the distance between the bases and things like that. And are we even home plate in the distance?
I mean, we've had the injury rule, you know, if a player stays on the ground, they have to come out. And that, for us, this year we got a lot of analytics from that and we got a lot of data. And there's clubs all around the world or leagues all around the world, you know, watching that with interest. So it's, as you said, there's some things that we can try and they may not work. And there's some things that, you know, may be useful. So I think the key thing is we're doing things for the right reason. And when they look at implementing the rules, it's how does this solve a challenge or make the game better? And I just think it's a cool thing for a new league. And, you know, there's those soccer purists that, you know, are very vocal when we implement stuff, but you can't forget, like, you know, the back pass rule was implemented and people were saying the same thing. You know, there's been rules implemented over time and now they're just commonplace and they have to start somewhere. So it's going to be interesting to watch.
It's fascinating how all the changes are happening. My last question is, so since you're working with, it's not youth soccer, but you deal with the youth so much. So how did you get into this role that you're working in today? And how do you realize this is what you wanted to do as to be a GM of a soccer organization and to work your way up to this role? And how did you get here?
I mean, for me, it's I never knew this is where I was going to end up, but I think that, you know, I've been really high on just if I do something, I want to progress and I want to see progression. And that's something I've kind of lived my life by. And obviously when I was younger, I played a lot. I, you know, played at a decent level, but I think in like England, I was starting to get looks at when I was 15, 16 and I had trials at Notts County, which is my team I support, Leeds United at the time. And you know, you get to that 15, 16 year old and you realize that's your last chance to make it. It's then you got to look at what are the next steps. And I was fortunate to be in an academy in England, and part of the process was they made us do referee courses. They made us do coaching courses. And the whole idea was that if you can understand the game from different points of view, it helps you, your understanding. So from there, the coach used to coach in Green Bay, and he opened my eyes up and he said, look, America is a great place to go. If you know, you don't make it as a pro, can you go over there and coach, or can you do something if you want to still be involved in the game? So I came over in between university years in the summer. I got like 3 months off every summer, and I came and coached. I was based out of Rhode Island 1 year, Southern California 1 year, Chicago. Came back to Chicago, was offered a job coaching the club, and worked my way up to director of that club. And I think, you know, when I started looking at building a family, I really started to look at, did I want to be coaching or did I want to get more on the business side? My wife's from Dallas and we moved to Dallas in 2010. And I started working for FC Dallas really as an entry level position, and wasn't sure that's what I wanted to do, but kind of got my foot in the door. Was selling tickets and started it and realized, you know, I'm talking about a sport I really enjoy, and started to get competitive. Wasn't long before I was kind of working my way up the ranks on the ticket side. I was, every year the MLS would do rankings on who was the top ticket salespeople, and I would always want to, I was in the top 10 and worked my way up to next year I was top 7, top 5, and really got competitive. But what the cool thing about that was I learned to work with all other departments, and I was given a lot of freedom to think outside the box, do a lot of things. So I worked alongside sponsorship. I worked alongside, you know, even the team. We did team events, but got a real good understanding of the business and the structure and the organization. And when this team came around in it'd be 2018, you know, ownership brought me in and said, hey, you know, you've got a really broad soccer background from coaching to the business side to, you know, just the understanding of the whole package, I guess. And they said, we would like you to interview for the position. And that was the first I was aware of it. And at the time I wasn't really, it was a shock to me. I hadn't thought about it. Prepared for the interview and went through the process, and the rest is kind of history. The first year winning the league was a great start, but I think it's, for me, is when I talk about progression, that was a huge step for me, and I've grown every year I've been here, because I've had, obviously, launching a new franchise. The second year was negotiating a stadium agreement, moving out to a new area. We had COVID to deal with, which was just a huge learning curve. And then obviously joining a new league with MLS Next Pro. But I've got to have a really good education in this role, and I just feel very, very thankful. I come in every day and want to work hard and just want to grow each day. But I've had a really good education and learned so much over these last 4 years.
Awesome. It's amazing. And my last question, this is very, I find it to be personal because it explains more of who you are. Who was your greatest influence, because you did play at a young age, and who was your greatest influence as a player? Then who is your greatest influence today in your role and what you do today?
That's a good question. As a player, my favorite player was always a player called Teddy Sheringham. Just a really, really good player I got attached to. It was when he was at Man United, watching him on TV. But I would say kind of my biggest influence, when I first started playing, it's because I went to a soccer camp. I didn't really have parents that were too interested in soccer, but I went to a camp, and I remember the guy's name, but it was, his first name was John. And from that camp, I got a love for soccer. I had so much fun. And from then on, it was just 24/7, you know, playing every minute I could. And found a really just love for the game, and that was my place where I really, I guess my happy place when I was playing. As soon as the game ended, I couldn't wait for the next game. But he sparked that passion for the sport. So he would probably it was not a huge influence in terms of time, but the spark that he set off was probably the most. Most influential. But I've been really fortunate. Everywhere I've gone, I've had really good mentors, and I've lent on them. You know, I would say in Chicago, I was at a club and had somebody who really wanted to push me and see me grow. And then here, I've got, you know, ownership is really supportive, and it's one of those things that I'm in a really unique space. I've got Jimmy Smith, who's a CEO, CFO, that wants to see me grow and succeed and is there for me to support. And even Dan, you know, ownership, you know, they really want to see the team do well. They want to see everything happen. And we get our owner comes out to watch practice. He comes to our games. You know, I meet with Dan every week. And I think that's just a really unique place where I'm at with this club, because I don't know if there's many owners that, you know, take the time to meet with their second team GM every week and really care. So I think it's just, I've been very fortunate along the way to land places and be at places where people are passionate about the sport and passionate about seeing people grow and succeed. So.
Awesome. I mean, it's nice that you have that environment to grow and learn, and even if there's hiccups along the way, that you're still being supported.
Yeah, I think that's something too, is that, you know, I talked about our staff growing and developing, and it's something that I feel like we want to see the players develop. We want to see our staff develop, and it trickles down. And if you're doing things the right way, I think that, you know, good things happen.
Hey guys, welcome to the conclusion of this week's episode of North Texas Soccer Club. As I spent time reflecting on this episode and how important it was for me, because this is where I feel my son kind of became more in love with the game. So focused on watching every touch of the ball when we were there and having opportunity to listen to how players talk on the field and the movement of it and the speed of the games. Now, that being said, North Texas Soccer Club is a great place for family. I mean, at the end of the games, they come over and thank fans and sign autographs. Seats, there's no bad seats in the house. You can always come and move around as needed. With that being said, you can also get seats on the field level access. And if you can do it, I would advise trying it at least once. These seats are phenomenal. You can hear the players. You can, if you stand close enough to the wall, you can get sweat on you. I mean, that's how close you are to the pitch. But as you sit there and watch these young players play, because most of them are under the age of 20, and the few that are over the age of 20 are great ballers themselves. But watch how they carry themselves. Watch the mannerisms they have, and explain to your kids who they are and what they're doing, and maybe where they came from, that if they came through the academy or if they tried out and made the team. Because when they go talk to them at the end of the match, they might have an opportunity to ask questions as they're getting autographs. But it's a great place for kids to learn to watch games. It's not crazy atmosphere. It's calm and collective, and you can hear cheering, and you can hear disappointing sighs when something happens. But more importantly, it's a time to bond with your kids and enjoy these moments when they're young. So as we conclude this week, I challenge you guys all to try to make at least one game this season with North Texas Soccer Club. Thank you for listening this week, and I'll see you next week by the pitch.